Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an Hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we have a most interesting guest today. He is a world traveler that brings a perspective about other parts of the world, people that occupy these different parts of the world, and how much the Western world is finally having an effect on their environment. My guest is Jeff Raisley. He has led a trek to a village in a remote valley in the Solu region of Nepal. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Donna.
Now, you're an interesting man. You live in Indiana. You have been an attorney for a long time, but you ended up going into Nepal and the Himalayas for over 15 years. And you became particularly familiar with a certain group of people that you called the Rai people of Bhasa. How in the world did this journey begin? I mean, being a lawyer, you have a particular kind of an environment that you're in. What made you decide to go into an area that's the top of the world, as so many people describe it?
Well, it all started with me turning 40 and manifesting midlife crisis symptoms to the point that one day I came home from the office. My wife slapped down on the coffee table in front of me a brochure about trekking in the Himalayas, and she said, "Why don't you go do this?" So she was basically saying, "Go take a hike on the other side of the world."
So, I like that. I like the way you phrased that. That's good. Go take a hike, husband. Go to the other part of the world. Okay. All right. So what went on from there?
Well, so I took her up on it. She's very good at reading people and understood that my adventuresome spirit was not being fed and that I needed a new adventure in life. So a friend and I went over to Nepal. We did an introductory trek on the Mount Everest Base Camp Trail, and I really fell in love with the mountains and also with the people who live up in the high Himalayas. So I decided I wanted to learn mountaineering, took a couple courses in West Virginia in climbing, and then went back and did my first big mountain, 20,000 some feet in Ladakh, India. So learned how to climb and mountaineer, and went back a few more times in the 90s doing climbing expeditions, and eventually realized that I wanted to do more than just be an adventurer in that part of the world, because I developed such a tremendous respect for the people and the culture of the high Himalayas that I wanted to work with them and help the local people in ways that I thought I could help them, because I felt like they had given so much to me. So that's how it all started.
You have right in the beginning of your book, in your prologue, you have a story about being a hair's breadth away from death. It was the avalanche experience that is mentioned in here. Tell my audience about that, because that really had an effect on you that was quite profound.
Well, it happened in 1999. I was on a climb of a mountain called Mira Peak. And for the Himalayas, Mira Peak is not considered a terribly dangerous, difficult mountain to climb. It's 22,000 feet, which is very high by North American standards, but not Himalayan standards. But what had happened is that year the weather was very peculiar, and it snowed day after day after day, and built up to a dangerous level, and there were lots of avalanches all across the Himalayas. And as we were leaving Mira Peak, hiking out, there was an avalanche, and three Nepalese porters were killed in the avalanche right above us. We escaped. We had to run, but the avalanche had petered out by the time it got down to where we were. But it did kill these three guys that we had seen in base camp and were following us out. It left me with the feeling that this was really crazy and ridiculous to be putting people's lives in danger just for the adventure, you know, for mm-hmm. Westerners to have some big adventure. So at that point, I thought I would, that was the end of mountain climbing for me. I'd had enough and didn't think I'd ever go back to the Himalayas. But in 2003, the kingdom sent out a call to mountaineers and trekkers all over the world to come and celebrate the 50th anniversary of the first summit of Mount Everest, which occurred in 1953, which coincidentally was the year of my birth. And so I thought, you know, what the hell, I'll go back for that. And I also decided I wanted to write about how the Sherpa culture had been affected by 50 years of exposure to Westerners. So went back, hiked all over the Khumbu area where the Sherpas live with my friend and translator, Hari, and researched about the article. And in the course of that trek, I encountered the Hillary family. Sir Edmund Hillary was down in Kathmandu, but his older sister, June, who was 82, and a lot of nieces, nephews, his son, and granddaughter were up in the Khumbu area. And I trekked with them for a few days and heard all their family stories about how the Hillary had fallen in love as a young man with the Khumbu, the mountains, and the Sherpa people, and had spent the rest of his life devoted to philanthropy projects within the Khumbu, working on bringing schools, medical clinics, hydroelectric, plumbing, that kind of thing. And it just really touched me and reinstigated the spark that I'd had earlier about trying to do something more. So I thought, well, this is the answer. Rather than just giving up and never coming back to this area that I really had grown to love, I would follow Hillary's example and in a small way try to emulate what he did by putting together trekking groups of friends, bringing Westerners who wanted to experience the Himalayas over, and trying to combine that with doing projects that would help the local people.
Mm-hmm. That part of the world, my goodness, I'm trying to remember the famous television personality's name. I can see his face. He was on television quite a bit, and he was the first American that was allowed into Tibet. And people that live in those mountains have just a very, very difficult time. Fuel is almost impossible to come by. They've denuded many areas of the environments that they've lived in where trees did grow. And the winds and the harshness of the environment is just unbelievable. It's just an incredible environment. And one of the comments that was made by Mr. Mahendra Kathat, who is the headmaster at the Hillary School, and he said this to you in 2003, without tourism, they wouldn't have been able to survive where they were. And in the 50 years where people have been traveling there quite a bit, there's been a lot of trash left behind, hasn't there? I know on Mount Everest, how many tons of that do they have there? Have they ever thought of taking it out?
Yeah, actually, there's been tremendous improvement in trash removal over the last 10, 15 years. What the government does now is it requires you to check in when you're going, when you cross certain points in the trekking areas, and you have to register, and then when you check out, your group has to account for trash. You actually have to bring out trash with you, and if you don't bring out a sufficient amount, then the tour group gets fined for that. Plus, the government actually pays local people to bring trash out, and when they get to a checkpoint, they'll get paid for bringing trash out. And there's also been a great effort by the mountaineering companies that do Everest expeditions to collect oxygen bottles that have been left up by previous expeditions on the mountains. And the guys that work as porters, when they get released from their duties, they'll bring oxygen bottles and trash to the checkpoints to make a little extra money that way. So since I first went there in the early 90s, it really has improved. I mean, the trekking trails where the local people have gotten a financial incentive to clean up have done so. But what happened originally is the people that live there had never had things that did not naturally erode or decay. You know, everything that they used was either made from plants or animals. And so, you know, like their clothing is made from yak hide. Well, when a shirt wore out, it would degrade naturally. So they'd never experienced things like wrappers and, you know, vinyl, plastic, things like that. So they assumed that you could deal with that just the way that they had dealt with the goods that they knew, which was just throw it on the ground and eventually it would degrade.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, for years, trash was just accumulating along the trails, but it really has improved. And the government has made an effort to educate local people about that. And most of the Westerners that go there are fairly environmentally conscious. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. people that love hiking and climbing usually love the environment. So, it's definitely better, but it was getting to be a very serious problem.
Yes, I remember seeing a film, and it just blew me away. I had no idea that there had been that much trash, so it's wonderful to hear that there has been such a good solution where these people can at least make some money so their lifestyle can be better, because the tourism really, really has enabled them to develop a better quality of life. It has enabled them to have plumbing put into some of their environments, and they've been able to bring levels of learning in. There's just it just amazes me. I had a lady on not that long ago from Peru, and she was in remote villages in Peru, and she said today, now they're beginning to get cell phones, and she said the change that is coming with that technology, the communication capacity, is just amazing. So I don't know that cell phones have gotten into the Sherpa environment, but I do think that it has just opened their world up, and according to the one gentleman, he said there isn't a villager around that isn't grateful for it. One of the points that you bring out that I think is amazing, and of course I don't know why it should be, but to do a climb on Mount Everest, it's $65,000. Wow, that's a big chunk of change.
Well, there's also a very high percentage of CEOs that attempt to be Everest climbers. There's a great many people who have big egos, think that they're entitled to stand on the highest place on Earth because they have super double A type personalities and are willing to pay to try to get to the top. What they don't understand is that only about 1 out of 8 people who attempt to climb Mount Everest actually make it. And for every 10 people who summit Mount Everest, one person dies. And those statistics have been pretty constant every year for about 25 years now.
And, amazing.
I personally find it offensive. I don't think that people who are not world-class mountaineers should be attempting Mount Everest or other major 8,000-meter peaks. But on the other hand, it's been great for the economy of Nepal and the Sherpas, so they're making money out of it.
Well, and it's their lives have changed. I mean, that's, if you want to call progress, part of what comes with that, being involved with different cultures, different environments. The Sherpas, as a people, are not very tall in stature, but, oh my goodness, they are powerful. And I can recall seeing a film a few years back how women had started to get involved with becoming porters because that enabled them to make an income. And this typically had been a total male enterprise. And they were really having a tough time. Are there any women that have gotten involved in the climbing? When I saw this film on it, there were about 10 women, and they were almost as strong as the men. They would carry just about as much as the men would carry.
Yeah, that's true. And there are several famous within Nepal, Sherpa women who've summited Mount Everest and other peaks. There are female porters. They're still a pretty small minority compared to the men that work as porters. But there are female porters. Realistically, they can't carry as heavy loads as the men can, and so the expeditions that want to move as much equipment up the mountain as fast as they can and pay as little as possible, you know, they're not going to hire women if they can hire men just because the men can carry more. So
mm-hmm. It's just fascinating to me because women don't have an opportunity, obviously, in that remote environment to be able to generate income in very many ways. Now, you have in your book information about Ganesha's strength. You've got a picture of him on Pokhaldi Peak. And you said there was so much going on then because there was all kinds of warnings from the State Department about political things that were going on. But these men were just incredible. You went how high? What was it, 19,000 feet? How high did you go up on that mountain?
Pakaldi's, the summit is just over 19,000 feet. Yeah, so that was just a little climb that Ganes, it's spelled Ganesh, but over there it's pronounced Ganes. He and I just climbed that together, and it was actually, our plan had been to climb a different peak with a whole group, but our team, by the time we got there, were tired, and they were all novice climbers, and were satisfied with just trekking up near the Everest base camp, and, you know, decided that they would put off trying their first climb to another year, and so Ganes and I just climbed Pakaldi, really just for fun. Although it turned out a little more adventuresome than just fun, since when we came down, there was a blizzard.
Mm-hmm. The adventures of mountain climbing. Nepal is, in your words, one of the poorest countries in the world. And for hundreds of years, there was literally no change. The outside world was not involved in Nepal very much. How has it changed today? What are the biggest changes in Nepal? And are they able to ease away from that severe poverty that has been permeating their environment for so long?
Yeah, Nepal has a fascinating history. I mean, it was cut off from the rest of the world for a long time. England tried to invade it in the early 19th century and was beaten back by the high mountain people, and which is how the Gurkha regiment began. The Brits were so impressed with the toughness of the mountain people of Nepal that they created the Gurkha regiment, which is still part of the British Army. But that opened up Nepal a little bit because the king signed a truce with England, which allowed England some limited access to Nepal. But before that, for hundreds of years, it had been really cut off from the outside world. And then when it was discovered in the early 20th century that Mount Everest was the highest point on Earth, mountain climbers became very interested, and of course all the famous mountain climbers wanted to be the first to summit Everest, and eventually the government allowed climbers to come in to try to climb Everest. And it took over 30 years of attempts before Hillary and Tenzing finally succeeded in doing that. And then after that, it became famous. Sir Edmund Hillary is one of the most famous personalities of the 20th century. And because of his fame and this great achievement, more and more people became interested in going to Nepal and at least trekking and seeing Mount Everest and the other big mountains, because 8 of the 10 highest peaks in the world are in Nepal, and they're all visible along the base camp trail. So that drew people in, but the country was relatively stable politically and economically for a long time, had a king, had a 500-year-long dynasty. Most all of the people lived as farmers, but as Western medicine and quality of life began to improve, the sort of strange downside of that was infant mortality declined, life expectancy increased, so there were more mouths to feed, people lived longer, and the agrarian society began to break down because the small family farms couldn't support the growing population. So people left the villages, went to the bigger cities, mostly Kathmandu, and eventually unrest spread around the country, and a Maoist revolution began, around 1990, and eventually the king was toppled, and the Maoists negotiated a truce and a new constitution, and a couple years ago, the first free elections were held without the king, and the Maoist party actually won the largest number of seats in the parliament, and Nepal elected the first freely elected Marxist prime minister, who has since resigned because he couldn't get along with the head of the army. But at this point, the stability to a large extent has returned, but there was a period from about 99 through 2006, where it was dangerous to visit Nepal, and it was on the U.S. government's list of countries that were recommended for tourists not to go. But now that the truce between the Maoists and the government is held, and the democracy is actually working so far there.
Well, you have got so many interesting characters in your book, and I know that you got involved with a school in Bassa. You were involved with fundraising, but you had this companion, Bob, who was very supportive of the fundraising. He ended up traveling with you, and you talk in your book about he had the symptoms of the ugly American. And, of course, anybody that's ever seen that movie that was made on The Ugly American with Marlon Brando, it's just something. And I've met people that portray that ineptness and thoughtlessness when they travel into different countries. And Bill was behaving that way. Tell us about Bill and what ended up happening with him.
Well, I think what happened with him personally was that he had a sort of culture shock much greater than he expected. And his reaction to it was to become very defensive. And in that kind of defensive insecurity mode, he, like you said, just manifested the symptoms of the ugly American, kind of making fun of the way the local people spoke and being highly offended that traffic in Kathmandu didn't follow the orderly ways that he was used to in the U.S., because in Kathmandu, all traffic signs and signals are considered recommendations, not rules.
Mm-hmm.
And he was not physically conditioned properly for the trek. He had not gotten himself into shape the way that he had committed to and that I thought he was going to, and he just, you know, he wasn't ready physically for a demanding trek. He was probably 30 pounds overweight, and he had an old basketball injury, a knee problem, which bothered him. So as we got into the trek, he really just couldn't handle it. But the uplifting part of the story for him was when he had to drop out of the trek, he was assigned one of the staff guys, a guy from Bassa Village, who spoke some English, and the two of them spent several days hiking at Bill's pace, visiting villages, and eventually going to the airstrip where he would fly back to Kathmandu. And when I met back up with Bill in Kathmandu, after I got back from Bassa, he told me that he really had an experience that deepened his own spirituality because of being around these people who had so much less than he does, but yet are happy and were very kind and gracious to him, so that he went back to the U.S., you know, feeling like he wanted to be more like them, because even mm-hmm. though they're not Christian, they manifest the Christian virtue of being kind to others at such a deep level, and at the same time, you know, have so much less than we do. So he had a very, you know, a tough experience, but a lot of his problems were brought on by himself, because he didn't prepare himself physically. He didn't follow the instructions that Adventure GeoTrek gave him in terms of what to bring, what not to bring. He utterly ignored that, brought all the wrong type of clothing, filled his duffel bag with four pillows, which were unnecessary because the trekking company provides a pillow, brought blue jeans instead of wind pants. You know, blue jeans are the worst sort of pants you can wear for trekking, because they're heavy and they're not flexible. So, yeah, that was Bill's story.
Well, you have so many interesting characters in the book. Bringing Progress to Paradise is the title of your book, and what you got from giving to a mountain village in Nepal. Your involvement with these beautiful people, the Sherpa traditions. I think you bring in your publication a wonderful insight to an environment that's been around for centuries and yet is going through the process of change. They're happy with what's happening, and they are openly receptive to having people from the outside come in. And I just think it gives so many different perspectives. It's a wonderful read. And, Jeff, I want to thank you for being with us today. Now, what's your website that people can go to find out more?
It's my name, Jeffrey, J-E-F-F-R-E-Y, Raisley, R-A-S-L-E-Y.com. And the website gives information about the Bassa Village Project, as well as trekking and touring in the Himalayas.
Well, I'll tell you, these children that are on the front cover are just like children anywhere in the world, full of life, smiling, and just absolutely a picture of what the future can be if we're open and willing to share what we have with others and to be able to educate them so that they can have the better things in life that they would like to achieve as well. Jeffrey, thank you very much for being my guest. Your book, Bringing Progress to Paradise, is a real eye-opener, and I encourage those of you listening to go to his website, Jeffrey Raisley, RASLEY.com. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away. More good things to come.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Rio. I'm the author of the cutting-edge book, Hooked on Raw. I want to give you and your loved ones the gift of optimum health. So when you order my book, Hooked on Raw, which has over 350 delicious, healthy recipes, I'll include my new DVD, What's Not Cooking in Rio's Kitchen, for a half price. Just go to my website, rawfoodinfo.com, and click on Holiday Special. That's rawfoodinfo.com. Click on Holiday Special.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open if you'd like to give me a buzz to let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Call me at 888-815-9. 8-1-5-9-7-5-6. That's 888-815-9-7-5-6. Well, we've got a lot of good things coming up this next week. We're going to be talking about caregivers on Monday, the Tao Te Ching. We're also going to be talking about a man who's made millions, and he's called the Tweezer Man. Yes, ladies, he's developed tweezers. Millions of them have been sold. That and much, much more. Fascinating man, Mr. Magna. Feed your brain, lose your belly. Okay, holidays are gone. We're coming to the period where we go, all right, now I got to get in shape. Oh, all right. I think you're going to enjoy Dr. Larry McCleary. Also, Rhea is going to be with us on that day, and she's been a guest on my show before, and I'm looking forward to having her share her nutritional knowledge with us. And then we're going to be talking next week about the peak of the devil. Now, this isn't some guy with a bunch of real strong horns on his head. No, this is about oil. That's right. So we're going to be talking to Chip Haynes and what that particular terminology means. Well, you'll have to listen to find out. Quantum healing. Deanna Minnick is going to be my guest. And I think you'll find her just fascinating. Her book is just very, very much filled with all kinds of dynamic information, information that can enable you to enjoy a level of wellness that you want to have. It's so important for us to take that positioning of personal responsibility, to be aware of nutrition, to be aware, male or female, that this chassis that we have, if we don't take care of it, it's going to have breakdowns and it's not going to be fun. Jack LaLanne is a person I always have a deep appreciation for. He's 96 and going just as fast as the Energizer Bunny. Why? Because this man is really focused on taking care of himself. Now, whenever I tell anybody that this man works out 2 hours a day, they go, oh, yeah, right, Donna. Who's going to have 2 hours a day? An hour for swimming and an hour for lifting weights. Well, you may not have 2 hours a day to be dedicated to. And, of course, he is 96 years old, so he's not worried about holding down an 8-to-5 job. However, I do think that his principles are solid and sound, and that is feed the body with good food, take good supplements, and get your exercise in. All of that makes a difference. You want to live your life with quality. You don't want to end up having physical problems where if you'd taken good care of yourself, you would not have them. And that is something you need to keep in mind. So taking that position of personal responsibility and being willing to read and learn is very important. I want to share with you, and again, a telephone number to call into 888-815-9756. The Tasha Young has a lovely little poem, and it's with a photograph that I have in front of me with ice skates and mittens, you know, everything that symbolizes the winter period of the year. But the fun side, and she said, sunlight glistening on a frozen pond, skating its way heavenward on figure eights of wonder. Isn't that a nice verbal vision? I just think it's great. Skating is so much fun. It really, really is. And winter sports are absolutely terrific. Oh, I've got a story for you. I want to share this story with you about psychic experiences. Yes. This is a story by Joanne Warfield, and she found herself with her heart just pounding. She said the pounding was so intense in her body, it really was an aha to realize it was her heart. She said she thought she was going to be detected. Now, why was she concerned? She was hiding in a shed. She wanted to know who the madman was that was stalking her. She felt he had a gun, and she had no idea who he was or what he wanted. Well, she held her breath. When she peeked around the shed where she was and decided to run for cover to her home, she found herself rushing through a clearing towards her house. She slipped in through a side door and locked that door as quietly as she possibly could, and then she leaned up against a wall, found herself sliding down into a heap, and then she heard screeching tires in the driveway. She looked through the bottom of the window that was nearest to her, and there happened to be just a tiny, tiny tear in the curtain, and she could see someone in the driver's seat of this vehicle that was going at an incredible speed, heading straight for her house. Well, she said she moved. She wasn't going to stay there. She ran out the back door of her home, went towards an orchard, heard the car behind her, and she thought for sure she was going to die. The next thing she found herself doing, she was sitting up in bed, terrified, absolutely terrified, heart still pounding, just pounding away. She said, "I finally awakened from this absolutely unbelievably terrifying experience, realizing I had had a nightmare." Now, she said, "It really, really shook me up." She said, "I did not want to close my eyes again. I started walking, got up, walked around my room. I had to stay awake." She said, "I turned on music." She said, "I sang out loud. I couldn't get over this mood." She said, "It was 2 a.m. in the morning. This was no ordinary dream experience." She'd had dreams before, but this was entirely different. Well, she finally managed to get back to sleep after having some cookies and tea or whatever. She said, I finally was able to go back to sleep. 2 days later, she was talking with her mom. Now, her mom lived a number of states away from her. And she said, "I've got to tell you, there's an awful story, but I've just got to share it with you." And it was all about her mother and her sister, who had been chased into hiding by the sister's husband, who was insane and who was threatening to shoot them. They had tried to find a place to hide. They hid in the shed, then in one of the cars on the property where they slept all night. They were terrified for their lives. It happened at 2 a.m. when she had her dream. Mm-hmm. Now, the question with that is, what was going on? Obviously, there's a very strong family bond. But she actually was living their experience. She was there in an astral projection. She was living it. But it was 2 days later that she found out it was happening to members of her family, or had happened to members of her family. The mind is an incredible instrument. It is absolutely amazing how you can have an experience like this and just feel like you're going out of your mind. It doesn't make any sense. And later on, you found out it makes perfect sense. There was a woman who I won't go into too much detail about at this time. I'll perhaps check. She was a psychic detective. And she was a person that on one of my trips to Alaska, I was told about her, and this woman had an incredible record with the Los Angeles Police Department and a number of other law enforcement agencies. Her accuracy was incredibly good. And she would have these experiences, dreams or visions, and they were just as clear as anything could be. Documented, no way in the world, supposedly, that she could have this, but she was able to do remote viewing as well. And there's something that when I'm talking about this, it's important to realize, and I was asked this in an interview just this week that I did, can you have more than one psychic talent? Yes. Psychic detective I knew, she could do remote viewing, she had clairvoyant experiences, she had things that were given to her in the way of information that she didn't even seek out. She had this innate ability to be able to go into levels of mind discipline that very few people want to even be involved with. So I have a great deal of respect for her and others that do the same thing. But it's important to realize that you can have any number of experiences. And if you don't have anybody to talk to, you need to find someone that you can talk to things to about things like this, because you shouldn't be afraid of it. It's not something to be afraid of. It's something to be aware of, like the woman whose dream I just shared with you. This dream was real. She was actually sharing the same emotional space as her mother and her sister. She just didn't know it. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't forget those phone lines are open, 888-815-9756. When we come back, if I have the opportunity, a little bit of crime scene science. Are you interested? Fascinating stuff. We'll be right back.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Hi, this is Rio, host of the Hooked on Raw radio show on rawenergyradio.com. If you're interested in the raw and living food lifestyle, along with the real story of what's happening to our health freedoms, and you don't mind a little controversy, listen to my radio show and podcasts on rawenergyradio.com. Each week, we interview guests and cover topics you won't hear on mainstream radio. Get informed, healthy, and involved. rawenergyradio.com.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. We've got a caller on the line, who I'm going to be going to very quickly. But if you want to give me a buzz, 888-815-9756. Oh, and by the way, I want to let you know I've got another interview coming up in England, in Oxford, England. I've got a show, and as soon as I get all the details on the show, it's the World Network, and they come out of the UK, and we are just going to have a great time doing some interviews and chats, and as soon as I get all the details, I'll pass it along to you. But I was invited back to do another show. Let's take our caller. Oh, 888-815-9756. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Donna. How are you tonight?
I'm doing magnificently. Where are you calling from, and what's your first name or initial there?
I'm calling from Canada, and my name is Catherine.
Okay, Catherine, and where are you in Canada?
On the East Coast.
Okay. All right. Let me give you my mental impressions, and then you can ask me about anything you like.
Okay,
first
great.
Thing, Catherine, that I'm looking at is, in a way, you strike me as a very mystical type of a person. I think from the time you were a little person, you've always had a high sensitivity about people, about life. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if you have a very strong interest in the healing arts and that your intuitive abilities are quite, quite strong. And I know that there is a great deal of your life where you felt like you didn't fit into anything, but fortunately, as you have gotten older, that has been changing. And you're looking at developing a bit of a different lifestyle, perhaps even relocating, but you're not ready for the relocation quite yet. You're just about there, but not quite. You've got to work out some financial matters, and some loose ends have to be taken care of. But I would love to see you reach into the depths of yourself and pull out the strengths that so often you cover up, because you are anything but a weak lily. You are a very strong woman. You're extremely intelligent, and you need to be able to put some investment into yourself, whether it is developing skills in design or art, or if you wanted to become more knowledgeable about managing money. I wouldn't care what it is you'd like to do. You need to do what really, within yourself, means a great deal. That's very, very important for you, because you are breaking out of a shell. I was going to use the word modality, but that's very cold. It's a shell. And you've been poking holes in this shell, which represents image, people's perception about you. You used the shell very effectively and very well, but now it no longer serves you, and you're having to redesign it. And I would say, keep in mind that the shell can be made into something absolutely magnificently beautiful. Think of the people that carve eggshells, and they have these tremendous creations they come out with. This is what you're doing right now. You are in the process of redesigning your life, and this is your choice. So you will not be able to put any kind of negative on anybody else. This is your time. This is your opportunity. You have an open forum available to you if you will accept it. But it means you're going to have to invest in yourself, whether it's through reading, education on another level of any kind, getting more social with people. You are coming out of a shell that made you feel somewhat secure, and now you know it no longer serves you. So I compliment you. Be mindful. If I were to give you two words, it would be mindful. Be mindful. Because if you work with what you have in the present, you'll tie up the loose ends, finances will be stable, and you'll be able to expand in the arenas of interest that mean the most to you and economically feel very fulfilled. Do you have a question for me?
Well, in some ways you've kind of answered it, but because I am very much a people person, and I've missed that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like to be around people. I like to do things for people. But there are some changes coming in my life, and I'm just wondering if you see that those changes in the next few weeks concerning my marriage, whether it's still going to be there or it's not going to be there, or...
I think you really are not that concerned about the marriage, if you're really honest with yourself. I think what is causing a concern to you is that things aren't moving as quickly as you'd like. And all I would say is relax. Just know that the right action is taking place right now. And I'm not saying this to pacify you. I really mean it.
No.
I really mean it. The gig is up. No more,
yes.
No more illusions here. No more make-believe. Let's deal with the reality and have joy with the fact that you have got clarity that's in front of you now, dear. That's wonderful.
Well, yes, because I do feel like I have in the last probably year and a half, 2 years, been coming out of my shell, being more vocal.
Mm-hmm. Good for you.
Trying not to be as sensitive. Trying to voice my opinion without hurting feelings, but... it's not always taken that way, you know.
But that's part of life. Hon, I hate to cut you off, but we are out of time. And, Catherine, pat yourself on the back. You are taking your position in life as the woman you are. This is good. And the reason that most people will be upset with you is that you are no longer playing the role of the doormat. Congratulations, my dear. You're graduating.
Well, thank you. That makes me feel so much better.
Good. You have a good weekend. I've got to go because I'm out of time. This is Donna Sebo. I'm so sorry I couldn't talk a little bit longer with Catherine. Remember,
that's quite
always...
all right. My fault. I called in late.
Okay. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. You have a safe and wonderful weekend. God bless. We'll be back here same time, same place, right here at bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.